And welcome to the M2 Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Lancy. My co-host right here is Kyle Heath. This is the show where we cover gaming industry-related news. We're talking new and upcoming games, technology, innovation, esports, and personalities, and just general gaming industry-related stuff. And at the start of every episode, we like to do a little bit of recap because this is a great time for Kyle and I over here to just kind of chat and see what we're up to. So, Kyle, what have you been doing, man? How you been?
Oh, man. It's been a good week, Mike. What can we say? We were talking about it a little bit beforehand, but gaming-wise, it's been fun, too. I hopped back on Smite a little bit, played some of that. Probably going to play.
You've been grinding that, haven't you?
I mean, like, not, like, heavily grinding it. Like, I'll play it maybe, like, you know, a few hours a week, probably, at most. It's not, like, a heavy grind. It's kind of just,
like, having a good time.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah. My buddies want to play. Yeah, I'll hop on, kind of thing. So, just really been doing that, and I think what's cool about it, too, is, like, we're kind of in that routine where it's, like, we've essentially, like, picked a night now where we're just going to try every week to, like, play for a few hours on the night kind of
thing.
I miss that
with my friends. So, yeah.
That's what gets me to play games more, I think, is if I just schedule it with people. So,
unfortunately, that's, like, what you have to do now. As you get older, you get more responsibilities. And one of the things that I look forward to every week, like, I'm like, stressed out of my mind, but I do look forward to us recording once a week to chat. So it's, like, that's the same way that it used to be with playing video games with my buddies, but they all have like separate issues that not issues, but commitments.
Yeah.
So it takes some time to work around those.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I just try to take advantage of it. We're all kind of like, you know, we're all still kind of like, you know, no major responsibilities, you know, we obviously got jobs and everything, but you know, I'm just kind of like, I think there's some people that like, don't like the idea of like scheduling gaming because like, you know, back in the day, you know, when you're younger, it's kind of just like, you know, you're just on, right? And it's kind of just like thing. But you know, more responsibility and everything, you have to, or else you just, at least I do. I feel like I have to, or else I just won't game with anyone. So it's important to me to like try and like schedule that stuff out because that's just what works. And I don't know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's kind of, you know, especially as adults, it's almost a necessity if you want to make time, you know.
So, no, I think the only people that think there's something wrong with it is the people that are like, maybe they don't have commitments. Maybe they don't have a lot of things going on. So they're just like, wait, why would you have a commitment? It's like, well, bro, I got like things going on. That's like now I think the leisure of having gaming time is getting ripped apart out of your life when you add more responsibilities. So then you've got to like make a requirement to push your responsibilities to create a little like small little window gap where you can actually game now.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate because I would love nothing more than to come home and game for like 12 hours every day, to be honest. I'd be totally cool with like staying inside and gaming constantly, but I have other things I have to take care of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I very much too, you know, like this past weekend, like especially on Saturday, like I got up pretty early and I did like kind of my standard like weekly grocery shopping stuff like that. I got kind of those responsibilities out of the way early, so it was like the rest of the day I was just like, you know, I don't got anything else to do today, so I'm just gonna like, it's been a while since I've had just a gaming day, so I literally just hopped on Fallout 76, which is the other game I played this week.
Yeah.
I just like, it was Saturday, I was like, I don't have like, don't have to worry about anything right now, like I could just like hop on and play for the day, and so it was nice. It's been a while since I've just kind of had like majority of the day just blocked off to just game. So I look forward to that.
I'm so jealous of you, dude. Yeah. So jealous.
But that was most of my Saturday. I hopped back after watching the Fallout TV show kind of, you know, a couple weeks ago. It's like,
it's been popping off.
Yeah. Like, I wanted to get back into the games a little bit because, like, I'm very much, like, after seeing the show, it's like, I was investing in the lore again. And I'm like, I mean, like, reading the, like, the fan wiki and stuff like that, like, getting, like, just seeing all the points I missed and whatnot. But now it's like, I've decided, like, I wanted to hop back into a Fallout game and I picked Fallout 76 just because, you know, it had been it was like, I think April 12th, 2020 was the last time I opened it. So it's like literally like right when the pandemic started,
4 years ago.
Yeah, it was like, it was right after the pandemic was a thing. And then like they released the update for NPCs. And so everyone was like, oh, like, let's check this out. Cause that was the one thing the game was missing that like a lot of people didn't like, myself included. It's like, there's no NPCs. So it's like, the world just felt lifeless kind of thing. And so they finally like kind of, you know, they wrote that wrong kind of thing. And so they added the NPCs. But I don't know, at the time, like, I just like wasn't invested. Like, I played it for a few hours. Like, I think my buddy and I played it, and after a few hours, we were just like, I don't know, it just wasn't like super appealing to me at the time, and I just wasn't hooked, and so I just put it down and then never picked it back up. But kind of after watching the TV show and getting in that lore again, and I don't know, maybe want to like, I was like, I finished watching the show and I was like, I don't feel like I'm done like with my Fallout. Like, I still haven't gotten my dose of Fallout yet. So I was like, you know, it's been 4 years now. Let's hop back on 76 and kind of see what they did. And it's been cool. Like, I played some of the, like, they recently added Atlantic City as like an expedition you could go out on. And
really?
So it's kind of like they made sort of like three like mini worlds into, and like they're combined together to be Atlantic City. So it's like you go out to Jersey and there's even like gambling and stuff like that in Atlantic City, which is kind of funny. You can like go to like play roulette and, you know, slots and whatnot.
That's very interesting. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Even in the apocalypse,
yeah,
the opportunity like to gamble.
Yeah, dude, that was one of my favorite things about Fallout New Vegas is they had like blackjack and stuff in that game. So you could like just literally like, it was just part of the thing where you could just go and just spend hours playing blackjack. And if you jack the luck up on your character, obviously the better hand you'd get. So right. It's pretty funny. But the one thing I wish the game did have, which I actually like saw a video recently talking about, at one point they were going to implement craps into the game, but then they didn't. And I was, because they found like some files that were related to it, like dice related like files and like the data mining, but they just never like, but I guess they just never implemented it, because like there was a lot of stuff they wanted to do with that game, but they just ran out, Obsidian just ran out of time, because they just, you know, there was way too much. But
right,
it would have been cool to get like craps in game. But anyways, besides the point, Fallout 76, I don't know, I'm enjoying it, hopping back in, playing it, seeing those kind of, you know, new areas. I haven't been to the Pit yet, which is like Pittsburgh in the Fallout universe. There was a DLC in Fallout 3 where you went to the Pit, and I loved that. It was one of my favorite DLCs. But they kind of like rehashed that in 76, and like, so you can go back there kind of in a sense. Even though Fallout 76 in the timeline of everything takes place like 150 years before Fallout 3, so like, you know, it's like way before the Fallout 3. Anyway, like you get into the canon, it gets pretty crazy. But but yeah, so I want to check out that. It's kind of the other DLC. But yeah, it's I don't know, it's been fun. I'm gonna hop back in probably soon and play some more. And yeah, I want to check out kind of those areas. But yeah, it's been fun to kind of back. I think it's, I see why there's been so many people that just haven't like gotten off either. So like you'll jump into servers and there's people that are like their levels in like the high hundreds or even like 1,000 plus and stuff like that. It's just
so
like,
they've
insane.
Been playing since day one and have never stopped kind of thing.
It's like there's like they must have, you know, 10,000 plus hours. The game is just insane. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it, so I want to play some more. But it's cool to kind of get back
That's
into
good.
The Fallout universe again, because it's been a while. So
it's really cool that you got, like, you basically got inspired from the Amazon TV series initially.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then
I mean,
you were like, yeah, let's go check it out again.
I mean,
That's
cool. Because like there's so many little Easter eggs in the show, and it's like, it just reminded me of the games. And so it's like, I don't know, I want to hop back in and play more and kind of get more of the story and stuff like that. And I even have this shirt right here, Vault Tech. This shirt I had gotten whenever Fallout 4 released, which was like back in 2015. I got this like, I think like a couple weeks before they like had merch on their site. And I was like, I think I was like, I had like just gotten into college, and I was like, well, like I'll buy some like cool like merch.
Yeah,
like
that's
I was
cool.
Like buying just random stuff. So I was like, yeah, I'll buy that. And yeah, I remember I wore this to kind of the midnight release whenever those were a thing. Like it's funny how those are kind of faded away now, but the midnight release for Fallout 4, I went. It was a lot of fun though. Like that, I've only ever been to a couple midnight releases, and that was one of them. Like, I really just like, I don't know, I miss those. They were fun.
What was the most memorable midnight release you ever went to?
I don't know. Probably that one, honestly. I feel like I went to a COD
cool.
release. I think I went to like the Black Ops 2 midnight release, I want to say, like that. Or maybe it was Black Ops 3. I'm trying to remember which one it was. I went to like, I think one or two COD releases and went to the Fallout one. I like the Fallout one though, because it was like everyone there kind of like were huge fans, right? So it's like,
yeah,
you had to talk to a bunch of people that, you know, enjoy the game as much as you do. And I remember the next day I like skipped class and just played and I grinded for like 16 hours straight and then passed
That's
out.
That's cool, man.
It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
Like, it's the first time, like, it's one of those things like you're off at college, right? And it's like, I'm an adult. I could just skip class and play. I'm an adult.
Yeah, exactly.
I could just skip class and just play video games. Why not? And so that was the only time I think I ever did that in college. But I was like, yeah, why not? It Fallout 4, you know, we didn't know when the next Fallout was going to come out, and sure enough, 76 was a thing, and that came and went. And it just wasn't amazing. So Fallout 5 maybe in, you know, 6 years, 7 years. Who knows? But,
yeah. Yeah, it's really hard to say. I mean, we've talked about it so many times when it comes to AAA developers. We can't really trust them anymore, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, every now and then, there's, like, one or two developers that kind of surprise us. But, like, AAA developers specifically. But I think most of my, my trust is now in the indie devs, which is kind of ironic. Because it's like, they shouldn't have most of the money. But it's like, at the same time, if they don't succeed, if they don't launch a product that's finished, then it fails on arrival. And they can't afford to fail on arrival. Whereas the AAA developers, it's like they already bought, well, not bought, they earned the right, if that's a thing, the merit to have a good IP. Like Fallout 76 failed kind of on launch, right? Because it had Fallout 2, 3, 1. Like the original trilogy was so successful that they could kind of afford to make a mistake.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the technical debt of, you know, using the same engine for 2 decades caught up with them. So there's that too. I mean, there's
that's also a good point. Yeah.
It's kind of a mess, but you know, they kind of improved. I think Starfield was an improvement on the engine, at least somewhat. So.
It was, yeah. Everybody seems to have liked the engine. There's nobody that ever complained about the mechanics or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's complaint was probably just like, you know, world content, which, you know, I don't know if I agree with. But we talked about, you know.
Yeah, I think we talked about it in our last episode. Check it out. But I think our last episode, we talked about Starfield and how it was probably just their issue was it wasn't advertised correctly. Like the people that expected the game to be a certain way and knew more about it, they absolutely loved it, right? Because it was like their type of game. But for the people that didn't exactly understand what Starfield was going to be, they ended up disappointed. And I don't think that's fair to the developers, because it's like sometimes it's just not your taste, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's totally true. There's a lot, you know, that could go on with it. So pretty crazy. But yeah. Outside of that though, Mike, you already know. Sports is going crazy this week. We're playoff season for a lot of things. Hockey being one of them.
It's been wild.
Oh, dude.
Absolutely
wild.
The
Carolina Hurricanes. They're just I had no words. Comeback. I've had no words since these first two games.
That was like your second playoff game you've ever watched too?
Canes, like I've sat down and watched a full playoff game. Yeah, it's probably the second one. I think I caught like a couple at the tail end of last year, but I don't know, wasn't invested.
I'm not even exaggerating. You probably saw one of the best Hurricanes games I've ever seen in my life. Multiple of my friends went to the game. Some of them that you saw like in the Discord that we share. Shout out, the link's in the description if you guys are Canes fans, come talk with us. But yeah, they were all just like that might be the best game ever. Like I talked to one of them on the phone, and he was walking out of the stadium and he was telling me, he's just like, dude, that might be like literally the best game of my life.
Dude, it was so good.
Changes you, that kind of thing. Like that's what's cool about sports and esports too, or like video games. When you play the first, dude, I don't know how you are, but like certain games about like Ocarina of Time, I remember the first time I came into the water temple and I was like, what the fudge is going on, dude? You know, dude. It's like it changes your life, it changes your perspective, and it's kind of cool to see. Not really, like, obviously, we talk about sports all the time. I'm wearing an Everton shirt, and they beat Liverpool this week, and I'm like, I'm ecstatic, super excited. And Canes won. It's just like, those impact you very strongly, but like, also games can impact you just as strongly, you know? Yeah. It's a very emotional level. It's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Anyways, Mike, did you play anything this week? Play some Rocket League? Play some...
I dabbled a little bit with Rocket League. I dabbled a little bit with the OG Xbox. Most of my stuff, man, is just like trying to take care of my own personal life stuff that I have going on. Like I have a lot of things on my plate right now. Yep. And what's really good is like, because I haven't been playing as many games the last like 2 or 3 weeks, but I've been knocking off my checklist that I've had for the better part of 6 months. And I'm like, I'm knocking off like big ticket items. So it's like every time I knock it off, I'm just like, oh, that feels good. That feels good. And I'm like, I'm getting to the bottom of the list. I'm like, there's one or two things where I'm like, okay, I'm depending on a couple other things to come in line or other people to get involved for me to knock this off the list. So it's off my plate technically for now.
Yeah.
So, man, next week, brother, I might be finished in Diablo. I might be finished in Cyberpunk. I might be chilling and just get like, I'm going to go deep into like actual games. So this time next week, I'm going to have way more games I'm playing. And I'm very excited. Like you were talking about, like you have to schedule it. Dude, I've been dying to schedule Helldivers 2 with a couple of my buddies, but like one of them has an opposite schedule of us.
Yeah.
The other one was traveling for the last 2 weeks. He's finally back and it's like, dude, let's get together. Let's grind, man. Yeah, like we got to spread democracy.
You know? Yes, sir. Yeah. Do it. Yeah.
Yeah. But awesome, in the meantime, it's been cool to like just do this podcast, keeping in track of keeping in line of what's going on in the gaming space. And I'm very excited to jump into the first article if you want to just get into it now.
Get right into it. Yeah, I'm down, dude.
Yeah, it's a topic that you and I have been getting more and more intimate with, I think, with game emulation.
Yep.
We've talked about it several times in the podcast. I've turned my Xbox Series X, my original Xbox, into an emulator.
Yep.
I play emulators on the regular, I feel like. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the emulators for me. In fact, my roommates and I, we fired up the good old Dolphin emulator. Like it was like, late last week, and we just played like some, I think it was like Wii Sports and stuff like that. Sports Resort and whatnot. It's fun. It's always good. It's always good.
Before you get into it, do you have the adapter for the GameCube controllers?
For PC,
Do you own the GameCube controllers?
I have a couple, but I don't have the adapter or anything for them.
So. I would highly recommend getting the adapter. They work pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's a load of fun.
Think about that one. All right.
All right. I'll let you do your thing.
Getting into it here, though, we have to talk about this. First article of the day from Wes Davis over at The Verge. Talk about this. I wanted to cover this because like this is like seemingly everywhere. Saw it all over Twitter. Saw it all over a lot of social
media. I saw it on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. I even saw it on YouTube. So
yeah,
when I saw this, everywhere. I was like, yeah, it's literally everywhere.
Yeah. And I will say, Mike, just, you know, disclaimer, it's mainly, you know, us iPhone users. It's kind of like Android, had this for a minute, all right? this is a victory for us iPhone users.
Most of the market is iPhone, though, so
I mean,
make no mistake. This is going to be interesting for people.
So the free Delta game emulator for iPhones is live on Apple's App Store. This article is posted on the 17th. I want to say it's when we recorded the last episode, but this is kind of like it's something we missed and we were covering other stories. So
yeah, it was something we missed and then it caught traction.
Yeah, over the weekend it was like exploding. So, developer Riley tested. I didn't say that. Developer Riley finally brings his polished Nintendo emulator to the App Store. So the Delta emulator is officially available on the Apple App Store for free. You should be able to find an Apple's official store in many countries outside of the European Union. If you live in the EU, it should be available in the new third-party Alt Store PAL app marketplace that just went live. The app marks the first significant and officially sanctioned game emulator for the iPhone since Apple began allowing them with wide-ranging console emulation from the original Nintendo Entertainment System to the Nintendo 64 and even the Sega Genesis for when you want to play those games that Nintendo don't. What you did there, Wes. Delta developer Riley told The Verge via email that the app is identical to the version debuting in the Alt Store PAL. The app features on-screen buttons that change your layout and appearance to match whatever system you're emulating, which I think is the coolest feature because they like, so for those watching the video, you can kind of see images of it on the screen, but it's like, it's interesting too. Cause like I've seen people kind of customize like their layout and stuff like that.
It's pretty
like,
cool.
The standard Delta purple. It's got like the nice, like, it just looks like the old fashioned kind of Game Boy. But depending on what you're playing, you know, we'll give you, you know, certain types of buttons. I'm curious if there's any motion controls in some of these games, because I feel like it would work really well with the iPhone, but I don't know.
Well, it'd probably work with the iPhone, but would it work for the games that you play on? Motion control, you mean like the gyroscopic
Kind of like stuff? Yeah, and stuff like that. I don't know.
But would that actually? I don't know. I think it would work with a game like. No, most emulators probably not, but like there are some games I can think of, perhaps like Tetris. You know, like blocks are falling, instead of like using the arrow key, you could just kind of like move it to the side. That'd be kind of cool. I could see that happening. I digress, though.
I remember when the iPhones like came out, like a lot of games utilized the gyro and stuff like that in the iPhone. That was like a huge kind of gimmick thing. It did.
But yeah.
Anyway, it supports Bluetooth controllers like Xbox One Series S or PS5 controllers too, and the app lets you customize their layout to set extra buttons for things like quick save states, essentially letting you pause the game whenever you want and load it up from that point later, or fast forward through an old school game's all too often unskippable cutscenes, or in the stream of startup logos. That's actually pretty sick. It's got nice emulation features. For those out there that play emulators, a lot of people also like will dog people for save state abusing, because like if you just like don't feel like loading the part back up and you just like put a point and then you go through a hard area and you keep dying, and so you just die a bunch.
Go
and
back to the same spot. Yeah,
people will dog you if you try to just like cheese that and not actually do it. But I mean, that's also, you know, what they're there for. You know, for people who want to play games like that. So I think it's cool to see the simulator kind of supports all that too. Delta even works with some of the quirkier Nintendo input methods, like the gyroscope in WarioWare Twisted, or the microphone controls in Nintendo DS games like Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney. Objection. You ever read the Objection guy?
I honestly never played Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, but I did hear about how it was like you could use the microphone.
Objection!
As a control. That's crazy.
Delta has other touches too, such as automatically grabbing the box art for your games and the ability to customize the art using its built-in database or your own custom images, and users can import controller skins or make their own. It also supports multiplayer for the NES, SNES, and N64 up to 4 players, as well as AirPlay streaming, which I think is kind of like the sneakiest like OP feature about this is the AirPlay, because like you could just like literally stream it to a TV, and then all of a sudden, if you Bluetooth your controller to the phone and then you're playing it on TV, damn, you got a console. It's like, it's pretty sick. Like, I've seen people do that, and it's like, yeah, so you're just turning the iPhone into a console, essentially. So it's pretty 100%, cool. 100%.
Yeah. That's ideal, to be honest.
Yeah, no. Like, if I was playing it, I'd probably do that a lot. I actually downloaded Delta. I just haven't loaded any ROMs on it yet. So at some point, I'm going to probably load some ROMs on it. But
legally, though.
Legally, you know. I got the disc, FBI. Just, cartridges, I have a thing, I swear. A small number of other emulators beat Delta to the punch, including one called IGBA that directly ripped off Tistuts Riley GBA for iOS code, and an NES emulator called Bimmy. Both were short-lived, though. The Apple, with Apple taking down IGBA over spam and copyright, App Store rule violations, and Bimmy's developer getting cold feet in light of Nintendo's recent crackdown on emulators. That's what I'm seeing. Nintendo out here cracking down. Yeah. There was an article this week, Mike. I didn't even put it in, but there was an article I saw this week where Nintendo was cracking down on the Garry's Mod creators for Nintendo-like assets in their game, and they were essentially giving them a cease and desist to remove all the assets from the community-made like asset store on Steam. And so, like, the Garry Mod, like, some of the community managers were like, hey, like, if you're all willing to help us out, like, Nintendo's, like, coming after us for the Nintendo assets that are on the community page, like, if you could just remove your assets, that would help us a lot. And then they're going to try and just, on their own, see if they can get rid of a lot.
Good luck, it's, man. Like,
yeah, there's, like, millions and millions of assets. They're just like, yeah, you can't do this. And just like, huh? It's been, like, over a decade. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, Nintendo's no joke, man. They don't play around.
Damn. They really don't. But, notably, Riley's app isn't new. He released the 1.0 version of Delta in 2019 alongside his original alt store alternative to jailbreaking. That means the app has already been through 5 years of feature and bug fixing iterations, so it will likely be one of the most polished emulation experiences on the iPhone for a while. Updated shortly after this, an update was made to reflect that Delta is now live in the App Store. You can literally download it today, iPhone users. It's pretty sick. Well, there's other articles too on Verge's website that talk about Delta and kind of this, that give like a more detailed breakdown. Like, yeah. I said, sickest feature in my opinion is just AirPlay Stream. Hook up a controller. Like, that's pretty sick. And you can play like GBA games on your TV. So it's got to be the best feature. But I definitely want to like test some of that out. Hopefully this week I can sit down, load a couple games, and then try out the AirPlay and everything.
Well, after you do, you should definitely come back and tell us how it is.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yep. I have to give my unofficial review at some point.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think that's really exciting for people that have an iPhone, and that this is like streamlining emulation, which is a great thing. I think a lot of people need to possibly have like a bit of a history of what games used to be like. You know, because it's like it wasn't always high speed internet, like everything was polished and super nice and like complete games. Like sometimes there were just, it was an ugly looking game, but mechanically it was better than anything we've ever played before. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think the coolest thing too, if you look at this image, Mike, what are we seeing right here? N64 controls. Look at that.
Little C buttons,
you got the Z, all that.
Very cool. Yeah.
And you got a joystick. I feel like it's got to be super responsive, but it's one of those things I want to get my hands on it to see how like the joystick, especially and everything, kind of acts. But I have a feeling it's probably pretty good, so let's check it out.
I would imagine like part of this is I don't know much about the app or like the developers, but it's got to be a little bit like open source, I would imagine.
Oh yeah,
and free, because if you're selling this for money, Nintendo will destroy your entire family line, dude. They have proven it multiple times.
So. Yeah, true. Yeah, dude. I think the biggest thing about this too, for like a lot of iPhone users, it's like if you want to get into like these older games, like the convenience of this, just loading an app, clicking a game, 100%. And just playing it. Like, dude, you can't beat that. The convenience is insane. So, yeah.
No, that's I've always like considered. The convenience with Apple products, as long as you understand like how to use them and stuff, the convenience of them is the selling point. It's like you might have like dated technology, it might be old hardware, might not be as powerful or open source, but it's like end consumer, like anybody can pick it up, learn it relatively quickly, and they can get everything they need out of it. Whereas if you go with something like an Android or LG, Samsung, or whatever that you have going on with you, that takes a little bit of, to get the full capacity out of it, you have to know some type of technological, like language, prowess might be a more general term I could use.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, different strokes for different folks, kind of thing.
Very true. Very true. Yeah, I don't know. There's cool things about iPhone. I think one of the coolest things really is I've used it before. I've shown you like the shortcuts where you can like make different, like they have a dedicated shortcuts app that you can actually like essentially program like different shortcuts. Like one recently I did is like if I'm laying in bed sometimes at night and I don't want like the blue light like just hammering me when I'm trying to sleep, I created one which is essentially like there's a filter that you can change all the colors on the phone to be red. And so instead of like going to the settings, going through a bunch of things, I literally just like click a tile and then I can just like click a button and it just makes my phone red.
It's way easier on your eyes, especially at night.
Yeah. And so I can just turn it off instead of having to go into settings. It's just literally click an app, looking button, and then just click another thing. And all of a sudden I got that red. I think I saw it in a short or something like that of someone like recommending, like, you know, if you have trouble sleeping and like you don't want to like completely get rid of your phone, like, yeah, just take the color filter and just turn it all the way red. So there's no blue light. It's less strain on the eyes, I've noticed, for sure.
No, 100%. Like this is for gamers too that like stay up late at night. Blue light is really bad for your sleep cycle. You should not go to sleep with blue light. You should not have your monitors up like all, because that's like kind of blue light when you're gaming, really. It's like you're getting flash in the face, predominantly blue light.
Yeah.
It's actually better for you to turn all your lights on. That helps like less strain your eyes.
Yeah.
Or turn all your lights off except for the ones that can actually make a color. So it's like it needs to be red. That's like it's red or it's kind of like a fire tone, if that makes sense. You know how like fire gets that like yellow, red, and orange, and sometimes green in like very off, like weird circumstances? Those types of colors are more better for your eyes. It's like a more natural light. And your eyes can absorb them, and it actually makes you tired. So I know plenty of people, like, I have smart lights all over my place. When it gets after, like, 11, 1130, they all automatically switch to red or, like, a very neutral, dark, chill tone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a way to do it.
Kind of digress there, but there are possibilities with, like, the iPhone that I think is more direct on how to make gaming emulation possible along with a lot of other devices. I know Android can do pretty much everything that the iPhone can. However, it's not as straightforward.
Yeah, it's not as user-friendly.
You have to kind of, yeah, you got to know what you're doing in a lot of aspects. And that turns a lot of people away from Android. So it's like, that's why it's like the battle between the two. It's like, it just depends on what you're interested in.
Yeah. Have you ever rooted your device, Mike? That's all I'm saying. You
know? Yeah, of course I have.
These Android users, man. I remember like when I had a Galaxy, of course I have. It was like, there was certain things I wanted to do, and I was like, oh, you got to root your device. I was like, what?
Then, like, what does that mean? Like, oh, you go to the about station, then you type on the system five times in a row, and now you're rooted.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Oh, then you click on like three other options. You basically get into task manager mode if you're used to PC. I don't know what that is with Apple devices.
Yeah. I don't even know if you could do that on an Apple device. I've never looked into it, but I don't know.
Well, the thing is like Apple devices in particular has such a small ecosystem of like they control everything that comes in to the app market.
Right.
And everything works as intended on all platforms once it gets approved on the Apple market, whereas Google or anything that's running a Android software, anything can be downloadable on the app.
Yeah.
Like the same thing with like Microsoft, you can download whatever the heck you want on an Xbox console. It's actually mind boggling. You can download like some person's like makeshift app that they made that like super sketchy stuff. Yeah. 100%. But you can never do that in Apple.
Yeah.
And it comes with a price tag. Like you gotta like the developers have to pay more. They have to be reviewed. It goes through testing. It's like all these different types of things. Yeah, so it just depends on what you want. Yeah.
I remember a little bit of app dev in college. We always use Android because it's easier. It's free.
It's easier. as a developer and as somebody who knows technology and like how to manipulate it to your will and like use it as a proper tool, because that's what it is. 100% go Android, go Microsoft. If you're really good, do Linux. But if you want like an end user product that won't glitch up, it costs more. Yeah, whatever, you're paying the premium, go Apple. So not good, not bad.
Very true.
It's just preference.
Very true. Some people have to, you know, do a little take two when they're deciding, you know, what they
look at that. I was wondering. I was like, we're kind of ranting for a minute here, so I'll be kind of quick with this one. I hope. I'm glad you gave me this article because I do have a bit of a connection. So this article comes from Game Industry Biz and is from Maria. Oh Jesus, this DeLisandri.
Yeah, DeLisandri.
I pronounced that correctly.
I like that.
Deputy Director at Game Industry Biz. So this it's pretty interesting. Like, do you have tattoos? And if you're a professional athlete with tattoos, does your tattoo artist own the copyright if that gets put in a video game? That's the question here.
You never know.
So Take-Two, the famous makers of NBA 2K, wins a lawsuit against tattoo artist. So that's the title of the article. The jury argued that a license to use LeBron James' image in NBA 2K implied his tattoos as well. It's very interesting. Mm. I can't wait to give my little insight. This is a pretty short article, so let's get into it. Take-Two has won his lawsuit against tattoo artist Jimmy Hayden, who claimed that the reproduction of his work on basketball player LeBron James in the NBA 2K series is constituted copyright infringement. As reported by Reuters, an Ohio federal jury gave its verdict on Friday, saying that Take-Two had a license to use James' image in NBA 2K, de facto including his tattoos as well. It therefore decided it dedicated that it didn't violate Hayden's copyrights. The attorneys representing Take-Two, Kirkland and Ellis Dale. Oh, that's a C. Sindali?
Sindali? Maybe.
Sindali, I think.
Sindali.
Anyways, the attorneys representing Take-Two gave a statement on the verdict, which she said was an important step for entertainment industry, and anyone who has ever gotten a tattoo might otherwise worried about their freedom to share their bodies with their tattoos. Hayden first filed a lawsuit against Take-Two in 2017. Witten? Is that?
No, with, you look within, at Skip... within an amendment? I think it's... I feel like it's a misspell, but...
That's a typo, so let's start over. Hayden first filed a lawsuit against Take-Two in 2017 within an amendment, amended complaint in 2019, arguing copyright infringement. It's not the first time a tattoo artist sues Take-Two, with Solid Oak Sketches filing a lawsuit in New York federal court back in 2016 for similar reasons. A year later, Take-Two argued in court that it was fair use and ended up winning in 2020. On the other hand, tattoo artist Catherine Alexander won her own case against Take-Two in 2022, obtaining $3,750 in damages after a jury agreed that reproducing her work on pro wrestler Randy Orton in WWE 2K series did not constitute fair use. All right, Kyle, I don't think you have tattoos. I've seen you multiple times. We've been to pools together. You don't have tattoos, right?
No, I don't.
Okay, I have a buttload of friends that have tattoos. You've seen my missus. She's got a lot of tattoos. Yep. One of the requirements that tattoo artists do when they create a body of work, it's artwork in the end, so they copyright it, correct?
Yeah.
That's what they do.
I mean, yeah.
One of the things that I know about like tattoos is pretty popular where I live, and there are multiple professional famous artists here that copyright their work, and there are multiple people that I know that have actually gone to other artists and said like they show an image. This is super common for anybody that has tattoos or they're a tattoo artist. They'll show an image of what they really like. They'll just like, oh yeah, I want something like this, and they're like, the tattoo artist is always like, that's probably copyrighted and I cannot trace it. I can't copy it. If you want that tattoo, you have to go to them or get their contact information, and I'll contact them, ask them how much it costs for me to tattoo that on you. Because it's a body of work. It's a body of art. So I don't know how you feel about this, but from that like standpoint of what I just said, from how I know people that have tattoos, these people that have tattoos, you're walking around with canvases, flesh canvases on your body that are copyrighted. And the fact that a judge, and you know it's a federal Ohio state judge that has no tattoos, doesn't understand the space, that kind of crap, probably a boomer. I'm making assumptions here. I hope I'm wrong. It'd be actually hilarious if I'm wrong. But the reality of the situation is like saying that it's de facto fair use because you signed with LeBron James that you can use his image. Well, it's like, if that's the case, then what needs to happen is tattoo artists, anytime they sign or do tattoos with famous people, like as huge of a name as LeBron James, they need to sign contracts anytime LeBron James gets a picture taken where that tattoo's exposed, they deserve royalties. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like that, like how far down the rabbit hole do you want to go? Because the tattoo artist should be paid 100%. So the court just ruled that no, we did our contract with LeBron James and that's part of his body now. So that's like what it is. It's like, okay, well, if I'm a famous tattoo artist, guess what I'm making my client sign every single time? Like a non-compete kind of, like in perpetuity for the rest of your life, I own that section of your skin anytime it's like, imagine him dunking and you see his tattoo like all the way up his arm, like famously, like Michael Jordan. I don't think he really has tattoos except for the LeBron, like the Bulls horns. Yeah. But when he's doing his famous like dunk in the freaking 90s, and he '80s dunk, and then you see the tattoo. Imagine like these guys, tattoo artists that put that on them. It's just like, oh, I demand royalties.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but it's like, I just think like Hornets wise, if like LaMelo Ball like puts up a poster and like he just like dunks on somebody, and it's like they take a picture of it, and he has all those tats. It's like 100%, it's like people dude. Like with the league go out of their way to like edit out the stuff in post, like on a skin, just so he doesn't have tattoos. Like I feel like it'd be kind of weird, like to just like edit out kind of a part of him, you know?
Yeah, dude.
But yeah, it's honestly it's something I like. I like I said, I don't have any tattoos, so it's never something I realized. It's like you go to an artist and you present something from another artist, be like, hey, I want something like this. I never like thought about it. Like, oh yeah, there's people that probably have like similar designs. And they probably own kind of some aspect of it.
No, they 100% own it.
Yeah, that's wild. Like, because there's so many different designs and so many different things you could do. It's just like I don't know. It's crazy how that works. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's interesting. But at the same time, it's like for Take Two, it's like, I mean, I get they're fighting some of these lawsuits and they don't want to give up. Like, you know, every cent counts. But it's like, you know. How much are these, like, how much do they really have to pay these artists, like, in any given, it can't be, like, terribly, it's not like they're sitting there having to throw $100,000 at them for a design, right? I mean, I feel like it just probably, like we were saying with that one artist who got, $3,700 bucks around, it's like.
Dude, that is nothing in the terms of game sales.
Right.
In a 2K game where it's, like, riddled with monetization.
Yeah.
Randy Orton, I'm just going to assume. Like, I've seen Randy Orton before. I've seen Batista is another good one where he has, like, I think Batista has, I might be wrong here. Do you know who Batista is?
Yeah.
I think he has the sword that goes right down his ribcage.
Yeah, he has pretty sick tattoos.
Like he has a pretty badass tattoo. Randy Orton has this crazy tribal tattoo that's on like his upper back. I guarantee it's either that or it's like sleeves.
Yeah.
And it's just, you got to pay the artists. So it's very interesting that the court ruled that because they had a license with the person who's wearing it means that they have overrule of the art.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
It's like, can I do the Mona Lisa on my chest, and then all of a sudden I own the Mona Lisa?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, I signed a contract with like, the company. Like,
yeah, it's like, I mean, so like, I couldn't go and get like a giant Blink-182 chest piece with their logo. Like, what?
Technically, no.
To do that? Like, it's crazy.
No, technically, no, because like it's copyrighted. Yes, you will find people that will do it, but in the end, you can be sued. It's no different than like using their logo in any profitability kind of thing that you do. It's like if we just started branding all of our stuff for the M2 podcast, I don't know, similar to like Coca-Cola. We just did the M2 words, but it was all red and white. Like it was very obvious that we were ripping it off.
Yeah.
It's weird, man. Copyrights in general are just a lawyer's favorite thing in the world.
Yeah. You just gave me an idea for a tattoo, though. The permanent M2 somewhere, like, showing us something to represent what we have done.
Oh, man.
That'd be funny.
You're hilarious.
Oh.
What do you say we jump into, I guess, 2023's biggest Souls-like game and what the publisher had to say about it?
I think we should get into it. A little bit of a hot take here. What's that mean?
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Not really a hot take. I mean, this is the article's a fact, but like, it's just crazy to think about this actually happening. So, this is coming from Allie Jones at Games Radar. Publisher behind one of 2023's biggest Souls-like announces $60 million best ever year just 3 months after laying off 10% of staff.
Great place.
Crazy year. You lay these people off, and then you have these crazy revenue. It's crazy. Lords of the Fallen, by the way, is the game we're referring to. So 1 million copies in its first week. The CEO behind one of the 2023's biggest Souls-like has praised his company's best ever annual results, barely 3 months, but after laying off 10% of his workforce. Earlier this week, CI Games Group CEO Marek Dominski, like that name, announced.
I think it's spot on.
He announced a $60 million turnover with profits of $3.5 million. That's it? Only that much profit? It's pretty crazy. Those results, which were the result of a period of continued momentum, capped by the million-selling release of ambitious Souls-like Lords of the Fallen, amounted to CI Games' best year. That best year, however, comes not long after CI Games laid off 10% of its staff. Back in January, it announced the tough but necessary decision to let go of several developers and a majority of the marketing team in an attempt to build business strength and stability. Recent fiscal reports state that around more than 180 people currently work at CI Games, suggesting that more than 20 people were made redundant. That's in spite of two ongoing projects at the company, which held a notable hit in the larger stages of 2023. Lords of the Fallen sold 1.3 million copies between release and the end of December, and that number is only likely to have grown in subsequent months. CI Games clearly had substantial hope for the game, which its director saying, with its director saying he hopes to make Dark Souls 4.5 ahead of release. Whether that lofty ambition has achieved is a matter of personal opinion, but that didn't stop Tominski from praising Lords of the Fallen as an undeniable success and a solid result. Plans for follow-up games already seem to be underway, with aims to attract even more players. This is just another example of the uncomfortable dichotomy facing the industry at the moment. On one hand, companies are making lots of money, yet huge numbers of developers have lost their jobs over the past 2 years. And perhaps the most egregious example I can think of, that Ali can think of, GTA 6 publisher Take-Two recently announced 600 layoffs. In spite of the lure of GTA 6, the highly anticipated follow-up to a game that made $8.5 billion, being just over the financial horizon. CI Games has neither 600 staff to lay off nor a cash cow like GTA to rely on, but it remains indicative of a particularly strange trend across the industry. Very strange trend, Mike, that could involve some investors and could involve the stock people and it could involve some economic downturn. It could be a lot of things. But I think it's safe to say revenue, I don't think, was an issue. So, you know.
No, I agree with the last bit of what you brought up about how it's just stock market value, investors, return on investment, all that kind of crap. And really, to me, I've seen this in multiple times in my industry with building engineering. When companies get to the final stages of a big project where they need a lot of manpower to get the project done, once it gets done, they just cut their losses with like the workforce. It's like, okay, we don't really need you anymore. Like, appreciate the help, get out of here. They like only hire them full time or like part time or contract work just for this particular project. And when the project's done, they're just like, all right, get rid of all of them and then keep the veteran talent or the veteran leadership that was there from the get-go. That's pretty typical. And what you're seeing here is just they're laying off what was the actual number? 10% of the staff. Probably 10% of the staff was working on the Lords of the Fallen. So I would guess that 10% of the people that were laid off, maybe, what would you say? I won't say 100% of that 10% was working on Lords of the Fallen, but I would say more than half, I think, would be a safe guess.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, and now what you're seeing is like, you see the number of 10% laid off, the game launches pretty successfully, and now there's huge profits. And I think it looks even better now that you don't have to pay those people anymore. It's very unfortunate. It's like a temp work job. It's very, very common, people hiring for temp work, like seasonal work kind of thing. This is kind of like a seasonal job. Just get the job, get the project over the line.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right, honestly. It's probably
I'm entirely speculating, of course. Yeah. I'm just trying to reason with, like, I try not to think people take enjoyment out of laying people off, right?
Oh, yeah, I do. I agree with you. I like to think it's probably not the best.
I'm sure there's people chasing money that make the decision, then there's jockeys that are just forcing it to happen. But I'd really like to think that it's not being evil in a way.
I like to be optimistic about it too. I don't think there's any like, I like to think that nobody's like, oh yeah, I get to lay people off today. I don't think anyone would wake up thinking that. Anyone sane would wake up thinking that. I mean, I totally agree. That's unfortunate though, man. It is, good for them, but yeah, it does suck to see those people have to be let go after such a big win, you know?
Yeah, that's no joke, because it's like the game's so good that you know that people put in their like heart and soul into the game, and then just to find out that they're getting laid
It's
off,
like, yeah, I mean,
it was like they were never valued in a way.
yeah.
Like the company didn't value them, but the success of the game shows that their work meant something. It brought happiness to people.
Yeah, there's definitely some pride in that, I think. Yeah, at least you made something good, you know?
Exactly.
Oh, man. Did you know that refunds on Steam might, in some cases anyway, Mike, might not be a thing anymore?
Well, I wouldn't say not anymore. I think there's going to be a time limit on it. I think that's the purpose of the article for the most part. And I'm sorry if you can hear it. My dog is absolutely sacked and snoring louder than a
Oh,
grandpa with apnea.
I
He is
wouldn't.
loud,
I don't hear
my man.
anything. I don't hear anything.
All right, that's good though. But it's been a while since I think we've covered The Verge and Sean Hollister. I almost said Hallister. Sean Hollister. And the title of this article is Steam will stop issuing refunds if you play 2 hours of a game before the launch day. I'm curious, and I can't actually remember, they used to have a set limit of how long you could play until they did refunds on a full release game, though. Do you remember what the it was an hour mark, wasn't it? It was like
It's
one or 2 hours?
2 hours. You
2 hours.
had 2 hours, and then after that, you're locked in.
I will make a judgment call real quick, like a hot take, just from reading the article here, right? So Steam will stop issuing refunds if you play more than 2 hours of a game before launch day. Early access and advanced access count against your total. So
Damn.
don't buy games unless they're finished.
But
That's all
would you... It's
I'm gonna
crazy.
say.
It's crazy.
It's a crazy concept. Don't buy games before they're finished.
Guess
Don't try
what?
to chase the Kool-Aid, man.
Wait for the reviews.
Oh God. All right,
Crazy.
this is gonna be a quick one. So let's get into it. So 8 years ago, Valve began offering no questions asked refunds for any game you buy on Steam, as long as you ask for that refund within 14 days of purchase and hadn't played more than 2 hours of the game. But when Valve started letting you know, play games ahead of their release dates with its early access and advanced access programs, it introduced a loophole. People could play for many, many hours ahead of launch and still request a refund after. Okay, so
Oh,
maybe they're trying to
God.
target those people.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a good game
That's
at early access.
that's kind of egregious.
Congratulations. Well, you found a freaking unicorn, because
Yeah,
I don't know any games in early access or advanced access that are actually good. It's been a long time since I've experienced that. And they ain't indie devs. Like, the triple A's are the ones that are developing these early access ones. Would you say that's true?
the most part. I can't
Yeah, I
remember an
bet.
indie. Well, I mean, there's like indie early access, I think. I mean.
Yeah, it's called Game Pass. Or like some subscription purpose,
Yeah,
like
fair.
website where they allow it on. Anyways, let's continue on. So this week, Valve's closing the loophole. Your advanced access and early access playtime now counts against the 2 hour refund limit. Here's what Valve's updated refund policy says about that as of today. So this is taken directly from the updated refund policy. Refunds on titles purchased prior to release date. When you purchase the title on Steam prior to the release date, the 2 hour playtime limit for refunds will apply, except for beta testing, but the 14-day period for refunds will not start until the release date. For example, if you purchase a game that is in early access or advanced access, any playtime will count against the 2 hour refund limit. If you pre-purchase a title which is not playable prior to the release date, you can request a refund at any time prior to release of that title, and the standard 14-day, 2-hour refund period will apply starting on the game's release date. And this compares to earlier in the month before this update was launched, refunds on pre-purchase titles. When you pre-purchase a title on Steam and have paid for the title in advance, you can request a refund at any time prior to the release of that title. The standard 14-day, 2-hour refund period also applies starting on the game's release date. Simple enough. You can't play 2 hours, period, regardless of the time period, it seems like. That's probably the easiest way to say it. Wouldn't you agree? Did I misread that?
I mean, yeah, essentially what they're doing is, so like, you know, back, like before this policy came out, if you were to get a game in early access or advanced access, you could, or like a few days early, essentially from release, you could just play as much as you wanted before then. Right. So like, if you say like you go hard on a game 3 days early and like you play, like you beat the game in 2 days, you could just refund the entire thing and it wouldn't go against you because it's before the actual release date. But now like everything counts. So, but it's kind of weird too, because they talk about like, if you pre-purchase a title, which is not playable prior to release date, you can request a refund, which I guess makes sense. Like if you buy something, but you can't actually play it and you change your mind, right, you can just refund it.
Yeah, there are some types of, what's it called? It's like, early access downloadable content. If you buy it early,
mm-hmm,
that seems super redundant. when you pay for the game, you can get the cosmetics and everything unlockable to be like an early access member.
Yeah.
But then you get the early access like an hour or two before the official launch of the game.
Yeah.
It's like buying the full game early, and they're calling that early access like a literal term.
Yeah.
Instead of what this is referring to is more of like a beta.
Yeah.
That's what I'm viewing it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I will say I've never duped the system like this before and got a game in like, advanced access and like done this. I never even thought to do something like this. So
same.
I don't know. This obviously, I mean, this doesn't affect me because I'm not one to like, it's been very rare. There's only a couple of games where I've actually like refunded it in before 2 hours, like where I've gotten it and like within like an hour, I'm like, yeah, I actually don't want this. Like it's only happened like a couple of times.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's cool that Valve introduced that ability to just give more control to the consumer in that way. Just like, if you really don't like the game after playing it for an hour, you can just get your money back. And I'm a huge fan of that. But yeah, I know, it's like, I never thought to do this before, so, I mean, this rule change doesn't affect me, but it's also like, it also is kind of like cheesing it, though. Like, a little bit of just like, you could play a ton of hours before the game comes out, and then just refund it all. I think that's a little crazy, but
yeah. I also think it's just kind of bizarre in general just to make this new Steam Valve policy. How many people are making like taking advantage of this, but you feel like you have to change it?
Yeah, enough, I guess, right?
Like, yeah, yeah, the answer is enough. I want to know what enough means, though. You know.
Oh yeah, no, I do too. This is crazy too. I didn't realize this until it was mentioned somewhere. But I did not, my brain never connected Valve with Steam. Because, like, get it?
That's wild.
Valve's produced Steam. Like yeah. I never put two and two together until I saw, like, a TikTok that, like, blew my mind, like, a couple months ago. I was like, oh my gosh, you're it makes silly. Sense. Valve. Yeah. Steam. Yeah. Perfect sense. I don't know if there's any other branding I'm missing under the Valve umbrella that, you know, that, like, fits the convention of, you know, Steam and pipes and...
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's something, but when you grow up with it, it's not new. It's just always existed. You miss those kind of things, like yeah. you don't notice it.
Yeah, it's clever branding though. You gotta give it to Val.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, 100%.
Very clever branding. You know what else?
Well, you know it's
pretty
clever branding.
Clever kind of.
But what got you back into Fallout is fantastic branding.
Yeah, it really is good storytelling. You know, I just enjoy playing games sometimes, which is a solid story. That's what Fallout is. This last article is coming from Kotaku. Zach Zwizen. I'm sorry, Zach. I mispronounced your last name. Just know it's nothing personal. I'm just stupid. So sorry, Zach. Fallout 76 is getting something rare. A second chance at a first impression. You hear that, Mike? Second chance for a game. Second chance?
Bold There's take. Always the chances in the bold, world, bro.
Bold take coming from Zach. Let's read on. Fallout TV show on Amazon has helped give the MMO a new lease on life. Fallout is bigger than ever right now. thanks in large part to a recent live-action Amazon show, which is very good. Highly recommend if you have Amazon Prime, which most people do, so you can just hop on this whole series right now. The show's success has led to millions of players hopping into past Fallout games. And yes, that includes the franchise's oddball MMO, Fallout 76. Thanks to the show and 76's inclusion in Game Pass, a lot of people are giving this online-only spinoff a shot and finding that, hey, it's not as bad as they thought. On April 10th, Amazon's highly anticipated Fallout TV show premiered to positive reviews from critics and fans alike. It's already been picked up for a second season and seems to be a big hit for Amazon Prime. It's also the newest Fallout thing in years, helping revive the franchise out of a bit of a dormant era. That's actually facts. Like, they're... not too much going on in the Fallout world. Like, you know, you got the new IP from Bethesda. There
hasn't been for a long time, yeah.
Obsidian's like, we're doing our own thing. Microsoft bought us. We got Avowed on the horizon. We ain't got time for no Fallout. Although I will say, please. I'd do some crazy things if Obsidian made another Fallout game, Mike. That's all I'm saying. Like, New Vegas was so good. Oh, man.
Yeah.
My favorite in the series, for being honest, but... since the release of Fallout 4 in 2015 and 76 in 2018, the series has faded into the background, as often happens in the games industry when a series doesn't release a new sequel or remake for an extended amount of time. Thanks to the show, however, Fallout is hot again, and a lot of people are entering various digital wastelands found in the games. Fallout even put out a tweet saying thank you to over 1 million of you who adventured with us in Fallout 76 in a single day.
That's crazy.
In a single day, you got a million people. It's a fun game. Yeah, the Steam charts went kind of crazy, Mike. We're hitting all-time peaks on the Steam charts, baby. It's just going nuts. I think it was like 75,000, something like that. It's kind of crazy. And then that's Game Pass. Yeah. Most of the player base is probably Game Pass, you can imagine.
I would agree with that, yeah. That makes sense.
According to an April 23 tweet from Bethesda, as just mentioned, over a million players hopped on the game. Player counts on Steam were regularly shown at over 50,000. Again, the peak I saw was like 75. And remember, that's just Steam users. The game's likely gotten even more people playing it via Game Pass, where it's available to play on either Xbox or PC. Across the web, all of these new Fallout 76 players are sharing their surprise that the online spinoff is actually pretty dang fun. Quote, veteran on all Fallout games, a newbie in 76. I already wrote in another post how wrong I was not to give Fallout 76 a chance earlier. Game is great. I still hate the grind, but it's great. Shared one player. Another player said, I'm a new player on 76. Played all the other Fallout games, but never tried 76 due to bad press. Got it for free on Prime, and I'm loving it more than Fallout 4. Level 28 already. Let's go, other player. It's just like there's no name. It's just like it's what random player said.
The other player.
Personally, I've returned to Fallout 76, the author of this article, and, I have too as well, you know, I talked about it earlier, after not playing the game for over a year. See, I was over 4 years, so take that, Zach, I didn't play longer, and I've not seen the game so active before. I can't agree more. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of people playing this game. I honestly like this is Zach's perspective, but I probably resonate a lot with this, and probably it's like I might as well just be reading what I wrote. Each time I've logged on, I've seen some low level players running about, waving at folks, shopping at my vending machines, and doing quests. Veteran players aren't mad at these new rapscallions either. Instead, most have explained on Reddit and Discord that they welcome the new players and they found the game feels more alive. Plus, they can sell them stuff and help them out with missions. I will say that. This is the thing. This is what's cool about...
so good, man.
This is what's cool about Fallout, Mike. 76.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if this was in the game originally or they added this later, but I wasn't aware of this until I hopped back in. So you get what's called camps in the game, which is like your own base, right, that you can just set up anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But what's cool about this, like your own base, you can build it. You can design it however you want. There's people that make like insane houses and like really cool looking bases. There was one world that had a floating base that was like 500 feet in the air. I don't know if that was legal, but it was certainly a thing. Anyways, very cool stuff. But one of the coolest things about it is you can actually sell stuff from your base and other people in the world, as long as you make it visible on the map, other people can go to your base and like buy stuff from your vending machine, and you can set the prices of items. So like some people like sell like aid supplies and stuff like that for like a higher markup, or like they'll sell like plans that you can use to craft certain items. for like higher rates. But there's some people that too that'll just throw in like any excess like gun ammo and stuff like that that they have, and they'll sell it for like maybe like, you know, a cap or two a piece in the game, which is like really cheap and way better than most of the vendors. So there's people that just have a lot of this excess and they'll just throw their vending machine, and then like you can just go and purchase it yourself, and it's at much better rates than like, you know, the actual like merchants and stuff in the world. So it's kind of cool. It's like community driven. Like you can just go and buy stuff from each other, and I don't know, it's pretty cool. And I think it's like there's those veteran players helping out the new players. I think that there's like that's one of the biggest aspects of it. It's just like, hey, I have stuff cheap in my store. You can come buy it. You know, it can help you out. So
yeah, that's like a very optimistic way of the way gaming can go, because sometimes like Fallout's such a big IP, or like everybody's like they've heard of it, that when it gets to the point where a major IP just loses a lot of the fan base, or they lose a lot of players, that when the new audience comes in, there's like one of two ways things go, and there's like no in between. The first one is everybody adopts and they say, okay, welcome the new players, you're gonna make the game alive again, this is gonna be really good for us, and like the community as a whole, they're like welcome with open arms. Or the second option is you don't know anything about this game, you're lesser than me as a player, and you don't belong here kind of thing. And that's just like lawn. A very toxic 100%, yeah, get these kids off my lawn kind of attitude, old man screaming at clouds, right? So it's really good to see that the Fallout 76 community, the people that are still playing it, are very welcoming towards new players.
Yeah,
it's very optimistic.
Yeah, it really is. And I will say,
positive, yeah,
this plays, there was something about the game too that really played the benefit of just having positivity throughout the game, is that obviously Bethesda's intention when they first released the game was to have the ability to PvP. And I don't know if it's really improved much then, but when the game came out, the PvP was so bad that people just didn't do it. Because it was like, it was just, there was no point. It was a waste of time. Like, everyone had an insane health. You couldn't really, like, kill anyone, and it was kind of just, like, a waste. And I don't know if that's, like, changed since. However, throughout my entire playtime, there hasn't been one person that's, like, tried to kill me. That's another player, right? Like, it's kind of just, like, everyone's just doing their own thing. And so, like, it's so funny in those games, it's like, in games like this, it's like, their idea was like, oh, it's like an apocalyptic wasteland, and the idea is we want some people to be kind, but also we want people to have the ability to just like be like a POS and just raid everyone, and like they wanted that kind of thing. But like it's pretty much entirely positive at this point. Like no one's actually fighting, because, you know, but and I think it's probably in part due to the PvP is so bad, there's no point, but also just like people are actually just more kind than not, I guess, for the most part. So it kind of just concocts like a, oh, everyone's just doing their own thing, doing their own quests, and kind of, you know, like, hey, you want like cheap ammo? Like, I can help you out, get you stuff cheap, like kind of thing. So
yeah, I'd be very curious to know, like, a super veteran, like never stopped playing it since launch, Fallout 76 player would have an opinion. Like, what is their opinion on this matter? Like, why would you want to be willing to help out the new players?
Yeah.
Other than what's on Reddit and Discord, because who knows. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I will say too, before I like finish up the article, there is one of the best things about this game too is like the event system is really nice at this point. So like there's public events that happen all the time, and it's very easy to join. Like you don't have to travel there, like fast travel there. Like you do fast travel there, but like most of the fast traveling from points of interest in the game, it costs caps on like in-game currency to actually fast travel there. It's not much typically, but like you normally have to pay that. However, like for the events, like if there's an event happening, you just open up the map. There's like a box at the bottom that says, hey, this event's going on. You just click it and then you can join it and it'll travel you there for free. And then you just have like a bunch of people like fighting monsters and doing whatever the event is. And it gives like a kind of a sense of community, because you could just like hop into this event at any point and just like you get some goods from it, you get caps from it. Like, and generally there's a lot of experience tied to these too. Like when I was like, I think on Saturday, like when I played a lot, like I was just like, there was a solid couple hours where I was just grinding these events, and like I leveled up like 6 or 7 times from like 30 to 36 and something like that. It's like, and it's like, nice. It was way faster than like doing quests and stuff like that, I feel like. And you just, you know, do it random people. So everyone gets something out of it. It's kind of, and like there's some events too where like the level 400 or 500s will come over and then they'll just decimate everything, and then you're just kind of chilling because you still get rewards, but like you don't really have to do as much because they're just like going in there decimating everything. So I don't know.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
That,
there's things in the game that like bring people together still at a certain
point. That's what I was gonna say. It was like it's a very good idea. Is like the developers are trying to build that community. So the more you play together, the more you rank up. Like it's a team effort to be better at the game or like upgrade your character, because that's ultimately what it is. That's what Fallout is, like just grinding to become better. Yeah. So it's cool.
Yeah, perks system, everything's cool. Like it's, I don't know, it's all well done, I think. But yeah, I don't know. There's something weird because like I'm more invested in the characters and the stories and everything after watching the TV show because it got me back into the lore. So it's like I'm playing the game now, actually enjoying it, as to what I probably, like if I played it 4 years ago, like this is probably how, I feel like this is how much I should have enjoyed it back then. But like, I don't know, something about the story and the canon evolving has like brought me back in to be like, all right, I want to learn. Because this is like, this is 25, so this game, just real quick, this game takes place 25 or so years is when this game takes place after the bombs fell. And like every other Fallout was like 200 years after the bombs fell. So this is like a prequel in a sense. So it's kind of weird kind of story implications and kind of where it falls in the timeline. But it's still cool to see like, okay, this is like right after the bombs fell and like everything's pretty intense because this is like right after it happened.
Total chaos.
So yeah, it's like, yeah, you kind of get that glimpse, but I don't know. It's cool. It's like, it's just weird. The whole storyline of Fallout is very much like it's interesting too, because both the Fallout world and our world are the exact same up until between like the 1940s and 1960s. And that's where the timelines diverge. And so that's where you get like Fallout, where like nuclear stuff and everyone's stuck in like 1950s technology. But like, you know, our nuclear warfare is like advanced.
That's what I know most about Fallout. And it's very weird.
it's really very interesting, though.
It's super interesting for sure. I mean, I'm people that I know, and I mentioned this before we started recording, I know people that have never played a Fallout game before ever. I know people that have honestly never picked up a controller other than when people are like, hold this for me when I leave, I'll be back, that kind of thing. They've never played video games before, and they're watching the Amazon Prime Fallout series and they're talking to other friends of mine that have never played the video game. They don't know anything about it, and just like they're asking me, they're just like, oh, do you know about this Fallout series? I was like, oh yeah, I forgot it came out. And they're just like, apparently it's really good, we need to watch it. I'm just like, whoa, what the heck is going on? Like gaming culture is infiltrating mass media pop culture. I'm here for it because that makes me more normal. It's very weird to see, as somebody that's like an older gamer, that old school games are now becoming like very accepted. And I'm for me personally, I'm very excited that games with amazing stories like Fallout or BioShock, Halo, even Call of Duty has some like really good stories, they're branching into live action and branching into the stories that I have known and loved for the longest time and becoming part of pop culture. It's very exciting stuff when it's done right. At least,
well, that's the thing too, I feel like now we're at a point where like there's been so much bad and people have figured out what like to do wrong.
Yes,
that people are actually, there's people that are coming along actually learning from those lessons and being like, all right,
100%,
let's make sure we
do
this right.
The Last of Us series is a great example. And you know what, this is no different than what book nerds for the longest time always felt like. They're the book nerds for Dune, like the original movies that came out in, like, I think it was the 80s, right?
Oh yeah,
they weren't that big of a fan, but like the last two Dune movies were phenomenal, man.
they're fantastic.
And it's like Lord of the Rings is probably one of the best ever trilogies from like book to movie adaptations in the history of mankind. I think that's phenomenal. Harry Potter, like I can keep going on, but like they started off like trash because that's just what happens. It's like people aren't willing to take the risk. So now that they see, it's like, okay, more and more people are more accepting. I think the adaptation of video games into the TV series and influencing back and forth is becoming more the norm. Because that's how it was with books. But like, I've never read a Lord of the Rings book in my life. I want to read Lord of the Rings after seeing the movies. You know?
Right. Yeah, that's how it should be. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm going on. I'm going to finish up this circle. Let's get this last little bit. It should be noted that Fallout 76 today in 2024 is a very different game than it was in 2018 when it released. All the NPCs, factions, many of the best quests, and the ability to leave the wasteland and explore other areas are things that weren't present when 76 launched years ago. If the show had premiered then, I'm not sure Fallout 76 would have been having a moment like it is now. But thanks to years of updates, improvements, tweaks, and new content, Fallout 76 is perfectly set up to capture new players who never gave the game a chance back at launch. In a sense, Fallout 76 has been giving something that few online games get, a chance at a second impression. I'm not sure if Fallout 76 will be able to hold on to all those 1 million players Bethesda tweeted about, but it has a better shot today at keeping this momentum going than it did in 2018. As someone with a lot of random stuff to sell in my vending machine, I'm hoping folks stick around and enjoy this odd entry in the Fallout series. I second that too, Zach. I hope more people will stick around. That'd be pretty sick. I don't know how many more hours I'll get out of it, but I mean, yeah, it's been fun to go back in and play and just see how far the game has come in the last, almost 6 years since launch. So and it's just like it's a more complete game now for sure. So
yeah. Yeah, I really like this article. I think Zach did a good job. And that comment is like, how many games actually get a second impression? I can only think of a handful, really.
Yeah. That many.
And it's really cool to see that Fallout 76 is getting a second impression for people. Yeah. And it's a lot to do with the live TV series. So
yeah,
very cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think too, and like I think it's even been said in interviews with like some of the directors and Todd Howard when they were talking about like when they were making the series, like there was definitely the kind of like not one of the main goals, obviously, but obviously one of the side effects to it was like when this series comes out, assuming it's good, which it was, people are going to go back and play the games. And like 76 is not the only.
He did say that basically.
Like, yeah, 76 isn't the only game that single player search too. Like Fallout 4 is arguably seeing the highest. It's like 3,000% like player like increase like the past couple of years. It's like that game has seen a lot. The sales have gone up astronomically. Like they're getting a lot of money just from people buying Fallout 4. The thing is, it's like, you know, if you got Game Pass, it's like you're done watching the Fallout series. It's like you could just go on Game Pass and download all the games and you can play them. It's like,
yeah, start playing. No problem.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's, I don't know. It's certainly very foreshadowed. I'm glad the show was good. First off, I was a little worried kind of hear about the Fallout TV show and like, was it actually going to be good? And like, cause it would have been like super like disappointing if it's released and it's just like, it would just miss the mark.
Bust.
But yeah, thankfully it didn't. And I didn't realize, and like going into it, I had no idea it was going to be canon with the universe. And they were actually like, they were very intentional about how they crafted the story to fit in with the games. When I figured that out after the fact, I was like, you know, like, I think I figured it out like halfway through watching it, that it was like, oh, this stuff is actually like matters. It's like, I was like way more invested. It's like, okay, it's cool to actually see this. And it makes me wonder. And I think some people are worried too about like, you know, cause, and there's been lots of talks of this too. It's like speculation about like, cause if you really think about it, Mike, Bethesda right now, Elder Scrolls 6 is like the big next thing, right? Like that's what they're working on. That's what they're bringing out. Like realistically, we won't see a Fallout 5 until 2029, 2030. Cause you got to think about that game's got a few more years. And then after that, like, are they going to go all hands on deck? That's probably going to take a few years. Like maybe at the earliest 2030. So it's like, I feel like it would be, and like I've heard other people have this opinion too, like it would probably be in Bethesda's best interest to try and, you know, get like an Obsidian, like I'm not saying get Obsidian, but like get a development team, you know, similar to in that vein that could work on like some sort of like spin-off or like its continuation in the universe, like in the meantime, while we wait for another Bethesda entry, because they do plan to do a Fallout 5. They've said that, but it's one of those things like, if they are going to do a Fallout 5, like they said, I mean, again, that's going to be a long time from now. So if they want to keep that momentum, I feel like it would make the most sense to like try and do some sort of like single player spinoff in the universe of some sorts between now and by the time they release that. That being said, of course, they have 76, there's expansions out for it, and they're continuing the story through that game. And so, you know, we may, especially with this player resurgence, hopefully they can maybe like put some kind of more like TLC into this and maybe like branch it out a little bit. But yeah, it's like, it's one of those things, like, really thinking about it, it's like, there's a chance too, if they don't do that, that we're going to get like a few more seasons of the Fallout show, which will all be canon, I would hope. And then it's like, you know, that'll continue the story. But like, at the same time, like, for us gamers, it's like, oh, we want it. Like, I would certainly love like a single player Fallout game. I mean, you know, I'm never going to complain about that. But I think most other people will probably echo that sentiment too, of like, I'd love to just play in this universe again, fresh in a new game. I think that'd be pretty sick. But also,
yeah,
I will say, there's a very, very big mod that was coming out for Fallout. I think it was based on Fallout 4. It was a dev team based in the UK. They made Fallout London, which is literally like the Fallout universe if it was in London, and like they created their own kind of story and stuff to it. I don't think there's any ties to the actual like series and stuff like that, but it's like a very thought through mod that's like essentially like another game. It's like based in the London area. That was actually supposed to come out on the 23rd. However, they had to delay it because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, in correlation with the TV show, Bethesda was like, we're releasing a next-gen update for Fallout 4. And so, like, it's probably going to break a lot of stuff. And so, like, it kind of screwed them over because they were like, well, we were going to release, but now we have to wait and see what this is going to do to our mod. But I'm very much, whenever that comes out, like, that's definitely something I'm going to dive into, is that Fallout London mod and kind of see. Because that's, like, that's one of the biggest Fallout mods, I think, that have ever been done. So I definitely want to check that out because it's, like, a whole new story and everything. And it'd be cool to see Fallout in London and kind of how they're, what the fans take, or like what, you know, a bunch of fans take is on, like, you know, across the pond kind of thing.
Yeah, that's pretty sick. I had no idea about any of that.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, this whole thing is like actually super fascinating because after the last couple of releases of Fallout, I always felt as though it was kind of on borrowed time after a while. They lost a lot of fan trust, and I mean, I'm sure the sales were always going to be fine and would keep them alive, but they can only hold you on for so long, you know? Like, there are a lot of multiplayer games that I can think of that, yeah, the IPs were super successful, but then when you miss a couple of times, maybe 3, 4, 5 times, you lose it, and you lose your fan base, the games start failing, and you can't survive. But it is very cool to see that Bethesda is just keeping it together. They're grinding hard, keeping the game good. You have a dedicated fan base that's adding content that's free. And the actual developers are kind of embracing it in a way. Yep. They're not going after them, not attacking them. And you have the actual TV series coming out. It's like, this is really cool stuff. And it's very exciting. And it's just good to be a gamer, I think.
Yeah.
It's ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah. This one thing, the one thing that they did for me, and probably I'm hoping for other Fallout fans and stuff like that too, is like the TV show got people invested again. So it's like,
yes,
they really need to seize that. So it's like, I hope something's done, dude, to kind of like hold on to that, because this is like, because like I said in the article, I mean, it's been just seemingly dormant since 2018. And so it's like, and there's been people like me like itching to get more into this universe. Cause it's like, you know, it's, I mean, Fallout New Vegas, one of my favorite games of all time. Like I love like that world. And so, yeah, like, I've been itching for something new. And so that TV show was like, it gave me that like shot of adrenaline where it's like, okay, I want more. So,
yeah. 100%, man. Like, I know I mentioned literally like 20 minutes ago about how if the games can become popular enough in pop culture, then it's better for like society or like the gaming community. And I'll give you a prime example of that. You played The Last of Us. When The Last of Us TV show came out on HBO, my family has HBO. They watch HBO shows like all the time. They like mix and match. They heard about Last of Us. They had no idea it had anything to do with a video game. They're just like, oh, Pablo Pascal. Yeah, like, of course. Why would I not watch this? Yeah, it's on HBO. Let's check it out. I get a phone call from my mother. She's in her 60s. She knows that I play games and stuff like that, but she has never played. She wouldn't know any of the games I'm playing. She's asking me if I've ever seen The Last of Us. Like it has no connotation towards the video games at all. My grandmother, who's like about to turn 90, asks the same question. It's just like, what is happening? Because it's bizarre that like gaming is becoming pop culture, and it never used to be that way. So maybe that's just like the development of time, of like how we are more reliant on technology. People are more interested in video games, people growing up with video games. it's very wild, you know?
Yeah, and it really is.
I'm excited. I'm excited because more content for video games is really cool. It's kind of like how everybody kind of made fun of people that watch comic or like read comics or Marvel or like all these different animes. And now all of a sudden I can't go down the road without seeing anime stuff on people's back of their car. So it's like, it's very cool. Just a generation of, I really like this article, and I think it's just a, like the tip of the iceberg of what's happening with what I've always considered like a niche community of gaming culture is now branching out and becoming a worldwide culture. I think this is really cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's a lot of excitement to be had. I will say that I'd feel for Bethesda too, because Elder Scrolls 6, that is the it's the follow up to one of the best MMO or one of the best RPGs ever made, literally ever made.
Yeah.
Ported on 20 different devices. So like,
yeah,
like you have to do this right, you know. It's like, oh, there's a lot of
take
pressure
all the time you need, man. Like, right. Honestly,
a lot of pressure on that to do that right. So
yeah, I don't think it's gonna fulfill the requirements or the nostalgia that people have for the previous games.
Yeah,
that's it. They're gonna be a failure to their own success.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, man. It's gonna be so hard to get it right, and I think there's gonna be a lot. No matter what you do, you're gonna get disappointed fans, obviously. But man, I'm kind of scared for that game because it's like, but it's one of those things too. Before it comes out, like I've never played Skyrim. That's when I'll play Skyrim as a precursor.
Yeah, 100%. Right? Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm kind of waiting until we kind of get more info, but. You know, once
that's
do,
what I'm like, talking about, though.
Gotta hop on Skyrim because, you know, gotta play one of the greatest RPGs ever, aside from Witcher 3. So,
it's very true.
This thing, like, all
right,
that's all I got, dude.
We've been, I was about to say, I was like, we've been ranting for quite a bit. I feel like we had a pretty good discussion about Fallout 76 and a couple of interesting things about the tattoo on Take Two. That one's still going to bug me. I can't believe that. I can't wait to tell the future missus. You know what I mean? Just be like, you know your tattoos? Like, they're not actually copyrighted. Just letting you know if you're ever in a video game.
Kiss me.
Yeah, no kidding. So, I guess that's all we really got. It's getting kind of late. I haven't eaten dinner. I want to let the people go. And I guess we'll do our usual closeout unless you have anything to mention. I'll give you the floor. Got anything going on?
No. I got a Dibski, dude. Been holding the people too long.
Yeah, my dog over here keeps moving stations, and there's a truck outside that sounded like him growling. I'm freaking out. What? I was like, you're what? That's why I look behind me. For people on video, that's why I look behind me. For people on audio, they're obviously confused. So let's continue on. If you're listening to this now, you made it this far, we definitely appreciate you. Love and respect. That's awesome. Like, subscribe, comment below, whatever you got to do. Appreciate the love. If you do want to read the articles yourself, we do have the links in the description below. Definitely check them out. Give the support to the artists or the editors, the writers. And I guess that's really it. Like, we have social media contacts below as well. We have timestamps, you know, the usual YouTube stuff. Yeah. So without further ado, I'm Michael Anthony. This is Kyle Heath. We appreciate you for tuning in this week, and we'll see you next week. Have a good week.
Bye, everyone.
See
you. Gaming.
Keep on gaming.
Play Fallout.
Have a good time.
Maybe.
Yeah, play Fallout. Check out the new TV series. Let's go.